Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, before we begin, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to utilize this opportunity to give a huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine. So a huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Nick S, Frugal Brutal, Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals, and Coach J-Row for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine for more information. Alright everybody, today's episode of the podcast is another Know A Brewer, where I bring awesome content creators and members of the community on to talk about their individual brewing styles. So, without further ado, I'd like to introduce our guest in the hot seat today. Without further ado, I'm going to bring the man of Grixis himself, Chris Von Doom. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Before we get started here, Chris, do you just want to introduce yourself for the folks out there?
My name's Chris. You can find me on Twitter at ChrisVonDoom1. Where you can catch me talking pretty much only about EDH. I kind of ignore the rest of Magic at this point. And just trying to just be a decent human being and encouraging others to do the same.
Yeah, it seems like that's kind of in short supply sometimes these days with all the things going on, right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so anyway, Chris, it's going to be a really, really simple episode here. I'm just going to ask you a couple of questions about your EDH brewing style. You're basically just going to walk myself and all the listeners out there through your deck building process effectively from beginning to end, and then we're going to finish off with the super secret that's not super secret bonus question, where it really gives you a chance to just talk about something for a couple minutes. So without further ado, again, I know I say that a lot, but it's really awesome for a dramatic effect, whatever. I don't care. It's cool. We're going to get off and start with the first question, which is how you choose your commander. And when I say this, I mean, do you choose a deck based on the 99 of what you want to do, based upon a theme, or do you always start with picking out your commander first and then going from there?
It varies, to be honest with you. I think it depends on... It depends on me and my mood at the time. Spoiler season's always, I'm always excited to see new things. And if I can be kind of be at the cutting edge of those new commanders. But other times I'll look at the decks I have and the cards I have laying around, and I'm a proxy heavy player too. So like, you know, just not having something isn't necessarily the reason to stop me, but Mm-hmm. No, I'll look through my collection sometimes and just get inspiration. Like, oh, like, even if the card doesn't make the 99, the idea of the card can provide me with creative juices for a deck. And so it really varies. But a lot of times I will start with a concept, and I like playing commanders that support the concept. I don't like playing something simply because it's in the colors I want. I think a good example is if for people at home who are familiar with the wonderful Lenny Woolley, also known as a Johnny's Gay Primate.
Yep, I've had him on the show before. He's a really cool guy.
Beautiful. His Golos deck. He used to have an Abzan Golos deck. He did a color-crafted Golos list. And that deck was phenomenal. It was so cool. It was good, but not overbearing. And long story short, it's why I am still a proponent of Golos coming off the ban list. But anyway, he had an idea. He wanted to do Abzan enchantments. He didn't like just playing an Abzan commander, but he was doing it. And then Golos came around that actually gave him ways to enable what his deck actually wanted to do. And I love that concept. So yeah, again, they kind of go together a little bit for me. I gotta have a commander that helps me do what I want to do. And sometimes the commander tells me what I want to do, and sometimes an idea that I have makes me go look for the commander that I need.
For sure. I mean, I feel the same way for me, honestly. It depends on whether I'm trying to build a specific archetype or whether I just really find a commander that really just speaks to me. And yeah, again, it's really cool that you did bring up Lenny, because again, I have had him on the show. He's a really cool guy. I got to meet him at Command Fest Bellevue last July. And yeah, he and I have definitely talked quite a bit, or yeah, we've talked at length about taking quote unquote powerful commanders and then trying to do funky things with them. So again, if you're a listener out there and you want to check out more, Lenny has a whole series over on EDH Rec where he just takes objectively powerful commanders and then does some very fun things with them. So yeah, definitely check that out.
Yeah,
Anyway.
caveat to that, fun does not necessarily mean weak. I think a lot of people are like, oh, this deck's going to be weak. No. It's just not what you're expecting, is all.
Yep, I do like throwing out my colorless Nigella deck for this sort of thing, because actually that did get mentioned in one of Lenny's articles a while back, just because it was one of the fun things that he had come across for people basically trying to take this objectively powerful commander, flipping it on its head and trying to, do something a little bit different with it. So yeah, I've definitely taken that kind of thing to heart as well. Maybe not so much as I used to, but yeah, it's really cool series. You should check that out if you haven't already. All right, we're going to move on to the second part. So you've basically chosen your idea, you've chosen your commander, whichever one really strikes you with the inspiration. Walk us through the rest of the part from going from that very first idea, that first strike of inspiration, to then just going to basically the first draft of your deck.
So I'm a little chaotic when I brew. Sometimes I will sit down and I will actually build a list online and like set up my I'm big into categories, so like once I have a list online, a lot of times I will actually shoot over 100. I like casting wide nets. So I have built lists that start at 250 and then have to whittle it down, because I just don't want to, I don't want to miss cool things along the way. So once I have my list online, whether it's at 100, 150, 300, whatever cards I have, I will start categories. So I'll have a category for ramp, I have a category for removal, interaction, tutors, and I'll start slotting the cards that best fit those categories into those categories. Anything that doesn't neatly fit or overlaps, I'll mark cards that overlap too. And especially if I can get overlap with the synergy of what my idea or what my commander is. Like if I'm doing a sacrifice heavy themed deck and I want to run tutors, well, mono black's a DC, Diabolic Intent, like, yeah, I'm probably going to run Demonic Tutor too, but the other ones like become immediately more like, yes, these are absolute keepers, because the overlap and what they're doing for me is just there. So those cards become locked in. But anything that doesn't neatly fit, I create a category called value, and I slide them into value. And when I have to start making my edits, the first place I go after just like doing my, check my P's and Q's. I'm not a firm believer in needing any certain set number of something. So I'm not like, I need X amount of ramp, I need X amount of removal. The deck dictates what that value is to me. And that includes my lands. So the deck dictates how many lands I need. The deck dictates how much ramp I need for me. So once I'm again looking for my cuts, I'll look over value. And it's like, okay, what kind of value is it giving me? Is it just good stuff? Does it kind of overlap with what I'm looking for? Is it something that I just think is cool and I want to try to fit into a deck? And that's the first place I start making my cuts. But I won't completely get rid of them. I'll slide them over to like I use Archindect to brew. I'm starting to host decks in Moxfield, but I really just like brewing an Archindect specifically. It's what I'm used to, and it's just better for me personally. I will keep everything in my maybe board so I can revisit it and as I start doing my play testing. Where I get a little chaotic and where people look at me weird, I don't goldfish my decks. Once I'm at 100, I start sleeving the deck. And my play testing is the first game I sit down in a pod with and play. I feel goldfishing doesn't give me enough information to satisfy my questions about the deck.
Yeah, that's
So I
actually
just
not weird at all, Chris. I actually do basically the same thing for all my casual decks, is I just like sleeving them up. I mean, I do give some thought, obviously, to my 100
Sure.
cards, but I also just like throwing it straight into a game and just seeing what sticks. You know, it's like I love the dartboard metaphor, right? I just like throwing things at the wall and see what sticks, right? And things that work out, I'm going to keep it. Things that are not going to work out are going to drop off. For me personally, the only decks that I goldfish are usually my CDH decks, where it's like I literally want to see, since I don't have the cards on hand most of the time, I want to see if this is even worth keeping, or if
Same.
I'm, yeah, or if I want to go with something completely different. But yeah, for more casual decks, I'm just gonna say, you know, Devil May Care, I'm just gonna go with it.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So you know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also same with the little CDH I do play. Like, also don't want to waste anyone's time at the table with CDH a little bit more. So it's like I need to know my lines. So and the best way to do that is to goldfish and just see the cards and know how you would play the cards as you hit them.
Yeah.
For me, again, for regular EDH, I just yeah, same deal. I just get to 100. I'll check the curve. I'm the type of guy that I try to keep my personal curve at 3. 3.5 is the highest I typically go, and that's usually in decks I'm not actually paying the full cost of those cards for anyway, so I don't care. So yeah, again, I get it sleeved on up, I take it out into the wild. For me, the wild is Spell Table and all the wonderful people that I play with there. And I try to get jam at least 3 games in a row with the deck as is, to give me at least a little bit of time to see more of the deck. When I hit my tutors, I'll use those tutors to find cards that were on that are on the on like the edge of either staying or that I'm super curious about, and just go find them and answer my questions as quickly as possible about them so I can keep going. But I guess this is a good time to also mention, for me personally, no deck is ever done. Like, I'm constantly tinkering, I'm constantly brewing. When it's happened, when I'm like, oh, I think this deck's done, it's usually when I stop playing it and take it apart. Like the that once I have solved it, I'm no longer interested in the way I was.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, I hear you on that one.
yeah, so again, like I'll come up with a 100 a 99 commander that I like, and I'm a fan of. But that deck will always still get looked at for changes and new additions and new tests.
For sure, for sure. I definitely understand taking your decks apart, or at least putting them aside once they've done the thing. I've had quite a few brews that have, you know, I played once or twice, I did the thing, I got bored, I put them away. You know, it's just it happens. And it's really cool to hear that you give it at least 3 games before you start making some changes. I've been known to pull the trigger occasionally on making some changes if I notice that there's an active non-bow, or I read the card incorrectly, or the card just felt dead in my hand, I will make a change after 1 game or 2 games. But yeah, I feel like 3 games is definitely a very good rule of thumb to just say, you know, given the variance that we have in this game, even with the tutors, there's still a lot of variance in this game. And also, it's the same reason why it's very hard to goldfish decks, especially ones where you have a lot of tutors, like with CDH decks. I find it very difficult to goldfish those, because what are you tutoring for at any given time when you're just playing by yourself? I mean, how do you know?
You're always in magical Christmas land at that point, and
Yeah.
like that's not the way the game goes. So it's again, like, you're getting to know your lines, but you're not learning your interaction.
Oh
So
yeah.
that's a big pitfall for sure.
Yeah, I mean, what do you vamp tutor for? What do you demonic tutor for? What do you diabolic tutor for if you're playing in a more casual deck? I mean, you're looking for a board wipe? You're looking for a creature? Are you looking for just some bizarre card that no one's ever seen before? I mean, it's going to depend on your situation, what you're trying to do with the deck. So I completely understand. All right, so we're going to move on to the super secret question here, Chris. And this is really not a super secret question, but it sounds really cool, and hopefully it drives engagement, right? And that's what us creators enjoy. So your third question and final question for the segment is, what is a deck that you have recently built or you are currently building that you just really want to share with the audience out there?
I am currently bringing back what is fondly known as for me as Grixis Tin Machine. It is a deck that I have been, as I said, as a tankerer. It is my oldest deck, and it has gone through so many changes, and especially even at the head of the deck. Currently, it is the Mishra Precon Commander, mm-hmm. and it is going back to being a Sylas Dargo deck. Shout out to my buddy Angst the Viking, who is terrified of Dargo because of like the second game I played against him, where I hit him for about 30 commander damage in one hit with Dargo. But yeah, I love it. It's the deck that made me fall in love with Grixis. It is the deck that has made me, you know, everyone thinks of me as the graveyard player, which was well deserved and earned. Thank you. But I'm also the artifact player. And this deck scratches both itches at the same time. So it is probably, I would describe it as my signature deck for those at home.
All right. Sounds good. Well, anyway, Chris, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. It's been awesome talking to you. It's been awesome just hearing about your brewing style and learning more about your love for artifacts and Dargo.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Yeah. All right, if you're interested in hearing any of the back catalog of the Noah Brewer series, as well as any episodes on the MTG and Quarantine podcast, you can find those on the usual podcast outlets, as your Googles, Apple, Spotify, Player, FM, Rockcast, Podcast, Overcast, Breaker, and a million others. I never remember all of them, but if it's a major podcast outlet, odds are I'm probably on there. You can also find me on the Twitters at MTG in Quarantine. I'd like to utilize this opportunity again to give a huge shout out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/mtgquarantine. So huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Nick S, Frugal Brutal, Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals, and Coach J Ro for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mtgquarantine for more information. And I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.